This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Alzheimer's disease is still a poorly understood illness. It is now the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. And advocates say Alzheimer's research doesn't get the time or money that it needs. But a play called Surviving Grace has been touring the country to raise funds and awareness. It is a bittersweet comedy that follows a TV producer whose mother's memory is slowly fading. The show features a celebrity cast who will be performing tonight at the North Carolina Museum of History. Actors include Governor Pat McCrory, TV star Lonnie Anderson, and public radio's own Diane Rehm. It is Diane Rehm, of course, who we chose to have on this program, host of her own show at WAMU and heard on this radio station, the host for 35 years, heard many years on this station, also awarded several journalism and cultural honors, including a Peabody Award, the National Humanities Award, and today, the high point of your career, Diane Rehm, an appearance on The State of Things.
Oh, well, I'm just delighted to be here, Frank.
It is such an honor to sit across the table from you.
Thank
you for being on this
Always
program.
Always wonderful. To see you.
We're going to take phone calls because I know that the audience here who calls you regularly an hour ago would love to talk with you again personally about both your involvement in Alzheimer's and your concern about it and also about your show. 877-962-9862 if you want to join the conversation, talk with Diane Rehm. Let's talk about the play first. You are the title character, Grace, showing the first visible signs of memory loss. Tell
Indeed.
Us about that character.
And I think what's so remarkable is that, say, 25, 30 years ago, Frank, people did not even use the word Alzheimer's. They were afraid to, didn't want to talk about a relative who might have it, didn't even want to think about it. Now what you're seeing is that scientists are really coming to regard Alzheimer's, dementia, mental acuity loss, all of that being lumped. And it does come in at such an early age for so many people, as it did for Trish Freidenberg's mother, Trish being the playwright in this case. She wrote in Hollywood for Designing Women. She wrote for other TV sitcoms. And in the midst of all that, her mother began to show signs of Alzheimer's. So this play is truly both a tribute to her mother and a wake-up call for the nation to understand just how many people Alzheimer's affects and how devastating its effects are on individuals and their families.
And their families, caregivers, and really all of us at large. It is costly, both in terms of time, lost productivity, and of course treasure as well, in the broadest look. In terms of public policy. Give us a sense about this performance, though. How does it look? How is it structured on stage?
It is actually a reading of the first act, so it lasts only 1 hour. The governor, whom you mentioned, plays a doctor to whom my daughter, who is representative of Trish, takes me for diagnosis after hearing lots of other doctors say, well, just take her to an in-house care facility. You know, we can't do anything for her, or it'll cost you $2,000 a month for a memory course. And you go through the stages in that 1 hour of first this dynamic, active woman whom I play to a woman who barely recognizes her own daughter in the end. And that is true to life and something that George Freidenberg is wont to say at the end of each performance, 50% of you over the age 55 will suffer from this terrible disease, and you will have the other 50% taking care of you.
Talk about that, the impact on caregivers, because I think that comes through very well in this play.
Well, in my own life, Frank, as you probably know, my husband died 2 months ago after a long bout with Parkinson's disease. Now, Parkinson's has an element to it called Parkinson's dementia. Now, there may be doctors beginning now who are starting to look at Parkinson's dementia and Alzheimer's under the same aegis, that they really haven't figured out how to divide one kind of dementia from another. In 2012, November, we had to, after he had many falls, my husband had to be moved to assisted living. And 2 months ago, after losing control of his hands, his legs, he could no longer feed himself. He could no longer take care of himself. He said to his doctor, "I am ready to die. And will you help me?" And within assisted living in Maryland, of course, the doctor could do no such thing. And he said, "Legally, morally, ethically, I cannot help you. But the one area where you can take control of your own life is if you wish to stop drinking, stop eating, and stop taking medication." My husband, brave man that he was, said, "My quality of life is totally diminishing. I have nothing ahead but bad news." And the next day he told me he had stopped eating, drinking, or taking medication. It took him 10 days to die. And it was so sad to watch. He had begun developing exactly that, Parkinson's dementia. He would forget things. He would not know what happened 5 minutes ago. However, he remembered where he and I had our first kiss. He remembered each and every trip we had taken together. So it's the long-term memory that stays, the short-term memory that goes. And the role of the caretaker can be just devastatingly difficult.
If I may ask you about that moment when he made that decision, you have been his caregiver, probably the primary caregiver up until then. Your job, your role was to keep him going. He's made a decision, a sovereign decision over and take control of his own life. And your role has changed. It's all of a sudden not what it was. And to support him, you would have to say yes. What was it like for you? What was that moment like?
Frank, John and I had talked about end-of-life decisions for years. We, perhaps you recall, were married for 54 years. And, of course, because we had talked about life-death issues, wills, executors, and so on, when the time came and he made his decision, of course, I was stunned in one sense, but recognizing who John was and how strong he was, I totally accepted it. Now, I must confess to you that during those 10 days when he was going without food and water, I was tempted to get a tiny bit of applesauce and a tiny eyedropper filled with water and shake him alive to say, please don't die. Please stay here. But I could not do that. I had to respect his wishes.
In your case, of course, you're talking about Parkinson's. Your play is about Alzheimer's. But as you say, so many close connections, particularly with all of the struggles that caregivers have to go through.
Exactly.
And all of this comes through in this cast and in this production. And it is an all-star cast. Much of it has traveled.
Right. We started in Washington. Actually, the play had been performed at the Kennedy Center in Washington, off-Broadway in New York, and then last year, for the first time, came to the Phillips Collection in Washington, where we were able, with our one evening performance, to raise $150,000 for research for Alzheimer's. And then we took it out to Hollywood. And Carol Burnett, who had been on my program, agreed to do my role, which she did. And then we took it to San Diego. And now here we are in Raleigh. We're going out to Indianapolis and perhaps to Dallas.
So it's been. Did you give Carol Burnett any notes after she finished? A couple of ways she could have improved.
Oh, of course, you know I did that.
Well, it's wonderful to see you here and to be part of this performance. The governor is going to be there. He's said his role. See, I will give you a dollar if you just slip the line in that says, "Since we have not expanded Medicaid, I'm afraid there's nothing." I'm sorry, Diane. I'm sorry. I can't resist. You absolutely can't resist.
Don't
forgive me. Forgive
you're
me.
The host.
Wouldn't that
don't
be great?
Resist.
Just one line. No Medicaid. Sorry, you're on your own, sister. just for the night. No, it's not in the play. Governor's going to be, and I'm sure he's great. Good of you to do it. I want to take some calls too. 877-962-9862. And if I can ask you for a moment about your career, because I know a lot of folks are very interested in what you do. You are absolutely the best interviewer in all of broadcasting.
Oh,
and you do the hardest possible job. It's one I try to avoid, which is the deep political discussion where you're talking with trained professionals who will not get off their talking points. It's the most frustrating thing in the world, and to do it well is the hardest thing in this business. And my hat's off to you. I think you're the best, and I wish people understood exactly how hard it is to do what you do so well.
Well, having done it now for 35 years, and we are having a big gala in Washington on the 18th of September to celebrate 35 years, you're absolutely right. Especially politicians are always on their talking points. And all one can do is to continue to repeat the question without trying to disguise it or go around it in another way, but simply, as I have said on many occasions, I'm sorry. You haven't answered my question. And that sort of makes people squirm a little bit, and I'm sure you've used that as well. Listeners expect us to get the answers. That's all there is to it.
Do you find that? I mean, there's also an expectation, and it has changed since I've been in the business and we've been in the business about the same length of time, where listeners got the fact that we were mediators who were asking hard questions, who packed data into the question, but ultimately had to let the answer rest on its own. These days, I'm noticing folks want their Perry Mason moment. If I don't get a conviction on the show, somehow we've failed.
Well, I think that's being a little too harsh, and perhaps the expectations are a little high. I think in order to be who we are, that is fair and impartial, I think we have to at some point say, okay, we know listeners have heard this politician weaseling out of the question. They know because they are so careful in their listening. And we've accomplished what we set out to do.
Do you do anything special, particularly in Washington, D.C., where you're sort of marinating in the rhetoric of the political discourse? Do you do anything in particular to sort of cleanse yourself, to keep away from that discourse so that you can come at it with a fresh mind? Or do you find that you just have to be immersed in it day and night in order to keep up?
I go home to my little long-haired, all-black, 10-pound, 11-year-old Chihuahua. He's long-haired. He's so beautiful. He greets me at the door, and that's all I need to relax.
Hey, Jeff is on the line. We've got one call. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing? From Raleigh. Hello, Jeff. Oh, Jeff is not there. But I want to ask you, too, about your vocal condition, spasmodic dysphonia. How are you doing? And has it at all changed the way you do your show?
No, it has not changed the way I do my show. What it has meant, and management and station seem to understand and even sympathize, after I do the play, I go home Saturday and I leave Sunday for Portland, Oregon. That's where my Johns Hopkins doctor now is and practices at Oregon Health Sciences University. I will get my injection into my vocal cords. And then just, well, you can hear it going now. Just coincidentally, the public radio conference is in Portland, Oregon. So I'll be there for one day. I'll come home Wednesday, and then I'll be off the air until my voice heals. And that usually can take anywhere from a week to 10 days to 2 weeks. But without fail, my doctor, Paul Flint, puts me back on the air.
And we're so happy he does.
Thank you.
30 or 40 years from now, when you retire from radio, will you start a career as an actress? How's that going to go?
I would. You know,
you like
I
it?
Love what I do. And Arena Stage in Washington has asked me to do a reading for them in the fall. So who knows, Frank? Who knows about tomorrow?
We cannot wait to have you back in any form and whatever profession
you
choose. Diane Rehm, thanks so much.
Oh, wonderful to be with you, Frank.
Diane Rehm, host of The Diane Rehm Show on WAMU, NPR, and of course can be heard right here on North Carolina Public Radio. Diane's going to be reading from the play Surviving Grace tonight, 7 o'clock. North Carolina Museum of History, along with other celebrity cast members. And if you missed that, go to our website to find out more and get it again, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of the Campbell Brothers. Stay with us.